Affairs Committee will come to order, please. Present today, Representative Menard, Boucher, Barton, Ulmer. The first item on our agenda is the confirmation hearing of Mr. Pat Carruthers, who's been appointed to the Athletic Commission. Mr. Carruthers, we're happy to have you here with us today, and I wonder if you have any brief comments you'd like to make to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. I had talked about this position. I was very interested in the athletic program in the state. As I spoke to Chief of Staff Pesca, I told him that I had seen some problems in my experience as a referee, and I've refereed in this state, boxing, wrestling, since 1980. I'd seen some problems. My first and foremost concern is with the welfare of the youth that participate in these contests. We have presently, within the state system, competitions, whereas amateurs are on the same program as professionals. This may, in the future, if we bring along some young lad that can go to the, is good enough to go to the Golden Gloves or even higher, the Olympics, this may well indeed preclude these young men from doing so, by virtue of the fact that they were on the same promotion with a professional contest. My secondary concern, but nonetheless important, is that I wish, if confirmed, to, during my tenure as the Commissioner of State Athletic Commission, is to preclude the state from incurring any embarrassment through the practices of promoters who have no such care. I'm all for the promotions, I'm all for the youth activities that it creates. This is something that we have proven right here in Juneau, that we've gotten a lot of kids with records off the streets. It's completely changed their attitudes around, so I'm certainly not against the program. But it's got to be cleaned, and there's a lot of cleaning up to do. I'm not casting any rocks or anything, but I would hope, and I assure you I will try, if confirmed during my tenure, to establish a competent program wherein we can be proud of it, and we don't have to look over our shoulders to see if we're going to be the cause of embarrassment to this state or cause jeopardy to the athletic futures of many of our youth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carruthers. Does anyone have any questions? Representative Martin.
Yes, Mr. Carruthers, as a member of the commission, would you sanction or allow barroom or roughhouse fighting?
Those are termed under Alaska statute as sham.
Yes.
We have no participation with those at all. In fact, if this was brought to our attention, we would turn it over to the investigative section of the economic and occupational licensing. They have investigators. They are our investigating arm.
Oh,
we come under that
well,
department. We would certainly turn it over, and we were required to by state statute. It's called a sham.
Oh, I'm well aware
right.
of it. It's been going on for years at the time.
There has been a lot
all,
going on.
But that's what I'm saying. As the new commissioner, now the other four swore to it, but it still goes on.
There is a lot of dust to be cleared out.
I've been heavily involved in this. We tried legislation and so-called special interest groups stopped anything that we tried to do with cleanup legislation. We never built
well.
That before. Well, another one. Part of our main problem that's never been corrected, and of course the commission, I don't think, has attacked it properly because they get persuaded by some of the major promoters. The state statutes make the state itself liable for many professional fights that go on that are scams themselves, and our risk management is the one that's held liable. I think we need to change that. Are you familiar with the scams that go on and with the promotions that go on, and yet if someone gets injured and they aren't properly tested, Alaska is liable?
I'm well aware of that, Representative
Martin,
I'm sorry. I'm personally aware of what I called a scam that started in Seattle, went to Ketchikan, Sitka, here, wound up in Anchorage. This is about 3, maybe 4 years ago. As a build-up, actually, to one professional fighter. It wound up, it started toward the criminal courts, and I've been assured that it was squashed by probably the same people you're talking about. This main fighter, which was all the to-do was about, actually was certified unfit for the contest a month and a half before the contest. Yet the promotion was maintained through all the papers, through all the media, building him up. Come fight night, of course, he didn't appear. But the promoters knew this a full month and a half before. Why it was not brought finally into the court system, I'm not aware. I am truly not aware. Thank heavens it didn't happen on my watch, nor, I can assure you, I will be at your doors for support if I find it happen again. But I will bring it to your attention, and there's nothing covered by statutes here that I won't be, and I will not hesitate to. I'm not here on an ego trip. This is a non-paying job, but I would like very much to at least start the ball rolling with the carpet sweeper, and I think we need it.
Well, we've had legislation to try to clean it up, but the athletic committee that has stopped it. Lots of luck.
Well, I know Mr. Carruthers, and I know he will do everything he can to keep that attitude of ignoring problems from being the case. Representative Boucher.
I think he's a Marine, too.
I hope. Need a few more of them.
About 35 and a half years' worth.
Yeah, see, so what's with you?
Well, I'm telling the names who to get on.
You know he'll get it done.
Representative
Boucher,
would you like to make a motion?
Yes, but yes, I move that we confirm.
If you use Marine in the middle name.
And I'm glad, this is just a kid, you know, he wandered around a little bit in the mud out there someplace.
Is there any objection to the motion to recommend the confirmation of Mr. Carruthers? Without objection, we will so recommend it. Thank you for joining us today.
Representative Boucher, we have never denied that we are part of the Navy Department.
That's
We've always thanked God we were the best part of it.
Put them away and protect me, buddy.
You know, the older you get, the more you dream.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The next person before us for confirmation hearing is Alan Vesey. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. In Fairbanks, we will be teleconferencing there. He has been appointed to the Alaska Public Offices Commission. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Would you have any brief comments to make to the committee on your appointment to the APOC?
No, I'd just like to say thank you. I consider it a compliment.
Do any of the members of the committee have any questions that they would like to ask him regarding his appointment to the APOC? I guess I'll just ask one comment. Have you by any chance had the opportunity to review the Senate bill which recently was adopted and has just come over to this committee? We'll begin our hearings on that bill, which makes some changes in the APOC operation. If you have had an opportunity to review that bill, do you have any comments you'd like to share with us at this time?
Well, let me say in defense of my ignorance that I was appointed about 2 weeks ago today. I have a pile of papers on my desk right now. It's a little over 2 inches thick that I'm supposed to be familiar with by Thursday. That bill is in those papers, and I have looked at it, but I would not be familiar with it.
Thank you. Have you ever been a candidate for public office or been instrumental in the candidacy of another?
I have been active in politics in Alaska. Well, I would say active one way or another since about 1974 when I first signed up as a registrar.
Anyone else have any other questions? If there aren't any other questions, would someone like to make a motion? Representative Davidson?
I do have a question.
One more question from Representative Davidson.
This is Mr. Vesey.
I think that's how it's pronounced.
Excuse me, sir, could you pronounce your name, please?
Veazey, sir.
Yes, Mr. Veazey, could you expand a little bit on what you see as the job of APOC so we could have a kind of a rounded idea of what we could expect from you as a member of that body?
Well, no, honestly, I probably don't know the full job of the APOC. It's responsible for enforcing Alaska's public disclosure laws, and if what you're asking is what sort of management philosophy am I going to apply, I believe very firmly in the fundamental principle of democracy. Those laws are intended to assure that those principles are operate fairly and equally for all.
Thank you.
Representative Boucher.
Make a motion that we approve the appointment.
Representative Boucher has moved that we approve the appointment. Is there any objection? Without any objection, we will be recommending your confirmation. Thank you for joining us by teleconference today.
Thank you very much.
The other individuals who we will be reviewing for confirmation are not available at this time. We'll be calling them in a few moments on teleconference. I would like to move from the bottom of the calendar House Bill 554. Mr. Richard Stitt has patiently sat through a number of our meetings and been unable to testify. If you'd like to join us at the table to speak to this bill, I think we can expeditiously deal with it and then move on to House Bill 555. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Stitt.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Richard Stitt, Grand President of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. And I thank the committee for this opportunity to testify. Our organization is most pleased that House Bill 554 is up for consideration. We urge the passage of this bill. We are asking that this legislation be enacted so that the state of Alaska can recognize and acknowledge the achievements of one of its citizens. The enactment of the previous enactment of House Bill 14 by the Alaska Territory Legislature was a significant achievement for our Native people. Elizabeth, alongside her husband Roy, struggled to convince enough legislators to pass this bill. The enactment of House Bill 14 was good for all Alaskans. For who can suggest that the uplifting of one portion of a society can be bad or be harmful to the other part of the same society? We are grateful to those past legislators who had the courage, compassion, and wisdom to enact House Bill 14. We are asking that this legislation be enacted for another reason. Our Native people need visual symbols to which they can look to with pride. These days, Native people receive a lot of uncomplimentary publicity. To be bombarded constantly with negative self-images of ourselves can eventually convince any people that they are not worthy. All races need heroes. The absence of heroes implies that we have none. The Youth Council during the AFN Convention adopted Resolution 8701 urging Native role models. In the April 14, 1988 issue of Alaska Daily News, there was an article entitled, "Eight Who Bucked the Dropout Mold." And I'll repeat part of the article describing the attitude of the eight successful graduates. They know that some will look to them as role models. They know they are needed. It's like being a foundation for the next generation. Hugh Harris, 34, said, "I like my nephews and nieces. I'm hoping they'll follow me." I'll share with you a story and make this point. An old fellow was an experienced juryman who sat on many trials. An attorney asked him, "Who influences you the most, the lawyers, the judge, or the witnesses?" The old man pondered for a moment before replying. At last he drawled, "Well, I'll tell you. I'm a plain and reasoning man, and I ain't influenced by anything the lawyers say, nor by what the witnesses say, nor by what the judge says. I look at the man in the dock and I ask myself, if he ain't done anything wrong, why is he here? So I bring him in all guilty." We need to inspire our people. Having Elizabeth Pradovich Day could trigger curiosity in schools. If students ask, "Who is Elizabeth Pradovich?" it would present a great opportunity for a teacher to inform her class that Elizabeth Pradovich was a Tlingit Indian woman who was pained by the treatment Alaska Native people were receiving simply because of their color and she committed herself as a leader of Native people to help establish a public policy that acknowledges that Natives are equal and that discrimination against any minority should not be an acceptable practice in this state. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stitt, for being with us today. Are there any questions? If not, thank you. Anyone else care to testify on the bill? If not, yes.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to acknowledge the presence of two of the ANS members, Sue Sargent, she's a second Grand Vice President, and my wife, Teresa, she's the President of ANS Camp Number 2.
Thank you for joining us today. Representative
Menard. Madam Chair, if there's no further discussion, I move that we move HB 554 from committee to individual recommendation.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Without objection, the bill moves from committee. Thank you. House Bill 555, we are going to be teleconferencing to Anchorage because Barbara Morse Quinn, HFC, is going to be joining us. Let's see, who has come to testify on 555? Commissioner, would you like to join us at the table, please?
Chairman, if I could pass out a transcript from the Friday Alaska Housing Finance Corporation meetings that I think is important. Of Mr. Schmidt to transcribe his statement to the board is because there has been a great deal of discussion in the legislature and within the administration about the whole question of market stabilization and whether it makes sense. And there are those that rely on academic theory that say that it doesn't work. MGIC is the largest mortgage insurer in the United States, and for better or for worse, has been very active in all 50 states for years. And Mr. Schmidt is the vice president in charge of special projects, and particularly the question of how you deal with foreclosed property and how you deal with markets that are experiencing difficulties. And it's MGIC's assessment after a year and a half of dealing with the Alaska market that this is the first place that they are heavily involved in where, in fact, market stabilization makes economic sense in terms of those who are in their homes and in terms of the properties that have been returned to whether it's Alaska Housing Finance or MGIC, Fannie Mae, or any of the other lenders that are involved. So I thought it was important to make sure that it was in the record that, in fact, people that have more experience than any of us in Alaska with this particular problem are advocates of of the Alaska Housing Finance having the flexibility to engage in this kind of activity. Now, what the proposed bill and amendments to 1856 do is give Alaska Housing Finance Corporation the flexibility to act in a reasonably prudent business manner with its portfolio in light of the present economic situation. And the board has extensively considered each one of these items. We had, according to Dr. Lear, the longest, most thorough discussion of issues like this that the board has ever been involved in. And I can say that the board unanimously supported each of these concepts, legislative authority for the corporation to go forward and act in a manner that will allow us to, in our view, weather the existing storm. A couple items that I know that have been of real concern to various people, the exchange trade question. MGIC, as is pointed out in Mr. Schmidt's testimony, has made a proposal to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation for an exchange program, which, without getting into the specific finite details, generally targets certain projects for movement through trading existing units for units in those specific projects. The intent is to eventually reach a point where instead of having a number of projects with 50% owner occupancy, we would have some projects, specifically at the lower end, or 40 to 50 projects that we anticipate will ultimately be low-end projects and we're going to have to deal with, that there just doesn't seem to be a market for it, to allow people to trade out of those projects and get into projects where the homeowners association is viable, and the occupancy levels are viable, and the project can work. So we specifically do authorize the corporation to engage in those kinds of activities, and there is an ongoing negotiation with MGIC and Fannie Mae, so that, in fact, it will, the goal will be realized. The other item that we include in the authorization is the ability to provide financing under terms established by the board to promote the sale of foreclosed properties. And it's my understanding that the initial language that Mr. Baldwin drafted has been changed by Representative Rieger and Brown to state that provided if the board of directors determines that the terms of financing do not work in excessive hardship on competing individual sellers of residential housing, which I don't believe creates any problems. And as chairman of the board, I have not run that language by the board itself, but I would be surprised if there was any concern, because the goal of the board is to see that we can hold values rather than continuing to force people into a situation where their equity is underwater. One of the ways to do that, and it has been successful in other locations, MGIC thinks it makes sense, is you do full price financing, full price with decent terms for periods of time. We have run some numbers that show that a $120,000 condo at 10.5% is the same as an $80,000 condo. The payments would be $120,000 condo at 6% would have the same payments as an $80,000 condo at 10.5% or 11% within $25 or $30. So you can provide financing options that will allow some of this property to move and to maintain in specific projects the value of people's condos without trying to warehouse units. You just do it through the financing terms that you provide. And that's our intent, not in any sense to create a hardship for a person who does not have Alaska Housing Finance loan and therefore and is competing with the sale. In fact, it's our view, if you did this type of program in directed situations, that people who did not have an Alaska Housing Finance Corporation loan would find that their values were holding and their properties would be, in fact, saleable, where without this option, we would continue to, in our experience, to suffer the equity underwater problem that everybody's heard about. We allow, under the statute that's been presented to you, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to take other actions that make economic sense. For instance, it's costing MGIC and Fannie Mae right now $8,000 a year to maintain a single unoccupied condominium. That's the carrying cost, $700 to $800 a month. MGIC and Fannie Mae are, as I said, engaged in negotiations with the corporation to do some exchanges. But one of the requirements of those negotiations is that at the end we will determine what the insurer's loss in fact is, and those condominiums will then be the responsibility of Alaska Housing Finance, not of MGIC or Fannie Mae. So the days of Alaska Housing Finance sitting back while somebody else paid the tariff on these empty units are rapidly drawing to a close. When you put things in that context, Willow Park is a good example of an opportunity. Willow Park presently has approximately 150 residents. Barbara Morris Quinn has spoken to the board and indicated that she can purchase 80 units and obtain certificates for 70 more for low-income housing. The net carrying cost of 150 units for Alaska Housing Finance would be $1.2 million a year. And so if you're looking at a market, which ICER has said we could have 5 years before the low-end condo market is in fact soaked up and there's enough people to rent and to use these units, you can see that Alaska Housing Finance could save some money if it didn't have to lay out the carrying costs for an extended period of time, and could, in fact, for some consideration, end up obtaining the 70 certificates or the selling the 80 condos. And the board and the corporation haven't had the authority to do this kind of thing. And these are business decisions that they should have the authority to do. Another example in Anchorage is Hollywood Vista. Hollywood Vista is 300 units. There's 15 acres of prime land located on Government Hill. It's much cheaper to carry prime land than it is to carry an empty unit, substantially more expensive. And it may very well make economic sense when you sit down and you pencil it all out for the corporation to take over and buy at some basis the Hollywood Vista apartments and knock them down and carry the land rather than carry condominiums. There are trades that could be made for senior citizen housing, for a lot of different kinds of things that we could do if the corporation had the flexibility to do so. So those are the items that were attempting to obtain the flexibility to carry out in the corporation. I'd be glad to answer any questions. And I think if we obtain from the legislature the authority for the corporation to act in a reasonably prudent business manner, that we will be able to manage our way through this present residential situation. If we don't, I think what we'll do is just continue the hemorrhage with neither the public, the legislature, or the executive branch particularly happy with the outcome. We always have to remember that, for better or for worse, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is a $5 billion entity. And if you look at that entity, $4 billion of it, plus or minus, is nothing more or less than a mortgage company. And it started out as a housing agency, and it's become a major mortgage company and needs to have the flexibility to act like a major mortgage company if we're going to manage our way through.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions? Representative
Davis. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, you spoke of intent guidelines, and could you expand a little bit on who would set these guidelines and what would be the measure by which one kept track that these guidelines were in fact being followed?
Well, that's the responsibility, Representative Davidson, of the board. And the board would have to, in fact, determine, the staff would, of course, do the specifics and the workup and ensure that it made economic sense or with the ends were being reached, and the board would set the policy parameters and have the responsibility of ensuring that the staff lived with and conformed with those policy directives.
And would they be in touch with, you know, outside types of expertise to ensure that those are the guidelines that we would best follow or set for?
Most assuredly. The board in December authorized 22 new positions, and I know that it's been the position of the board that Alaska Housing Finance needs to expand its staffing and its expertise. It's a bigger financial institution than National Bank of Alaska by about four times. And if you look at the number of top-level staff in Alaska Housing Finance Corporation versus NBA, there's a great disparity. That was fine when the responsibility of the corporation was to ensure that we gave away oil money with some degree of fairness. But we now have another major responsibility that Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is the major player in the residential market in Alaska, and it needs to be able to manage its way through the present situation. Because if it can't, there's nothing that any of the rest of us can do.
The other concern I had was that, you know, we've talked about the market stabilization, and we haven't talked a lot about the people affected other than those who own these things. And I was wondering if we concentrate on taking off the market or getting rid of some of the lower end housing that's there, how are we prepared to meet the housing needs of some of these people who exist at that end of the economic scale?
But this also would authorize us to rent. I mean, what we're going to end up doing is Connie Ishimura is right in her testimony. There's a flight to quality. There's a flight to quality to a point. Then there, all indications are there's 10,000 more units than people. It's pretty tough to fly to quality when there's nobody to go. But at some point in time, is what's happening is we're moving things up. But we've got more than I would like to admit. Of real substandard units. During the heyday of the Alaska construction boom, we evidently saved money with building inspectors because there are whole projects that people came in, built, took the money and ran. And we won't know until everything sifts itself out, but my expectation is that we can in fact provide better quality housing for a larger proportion of the population and take a bunch of units off the market. Willow Park, Hollywood Vista, right there, that's 500 units, of which about 200 were occupied, and clearly substandard.
We do have Barbara Morris Quinn in Anchorage and also someone else, a couple of people here, I think. But let me just ask you one question, Commissioner Smith, before we let you go. On page 2 of the proposed CS, I draw your attention to Section 5 and Section 9. Section 5 lays out the conditions under which the residential housing may be demolished under the conditions of A, B, and C. Then subsection 9 talks about investing of funds of the corporation in the removal and disposal of substandard publicly owned residential housing. I'd just like to know how those two sections interface.
Well, the 5 is residential housing that's already owned and been foreclosed and commonly known as OREO, but that the corporation owns. 9 was specifically directed towards the Hollywood Vista Willow Park type of scenario. If it is prudent for the corporation to go, in fact, invest in land or in housing and then remove that housing.
Let me ask the question a little differently. Publicly owned residential housing on line 23, does that mean owned by the state of Alaska?
Could be asked, but it could be a municipality. That's the intention.
The intention was to broaden it, not to, there was not a project specific intent. It was to allow the corporation to have the flexibility.
We had a rather lengthy discussion of this issue in the Joint Economic Committee Subcommittee on Housing, and one of the concerns that was expressed not only by myself but by others was that there's one thing of investing state funds in demolishing a state-owned facility, and it's quite something else to either demolish some other government's property or private sector property. The state has a responsibility for its properties. Question: to what extent does it have a responsibility for somebody else's properties? And I'd just be curious if you have either a feeling yourself or if the board discussed that point
extensively, and that was why item 9. What we're saying there is that if the corporation can make money by doing certain things, buying Hollywood Vista, knocking it down, rezoning, holding the property for some future day when it can recoup its investment and save itself 300 times 800 a month or 8,000 a year, 1,700 a month, that when the corporation makes that kind of decision, it can then buy on some terms, tear down, and do what a private enterprise corporation would do in order to protect itself, which is separate and distinct from when the corporation, i.e. the state, owns property and it's substandard, and that's A. There's no other use for it. That's B. Or that it's the low-end condos and you just got piles of them and they're not, from what I understand, a good portion of them are substandard. They meet A and B and then there's no market for them. C. And that, as I see it, is separate and distinct from when the corporation sits there and it says, okay, we need to take 500 units off the market. It's costing us, let's use Hollywood Vista as an example. 300 units at Hollywood Vista times 8,000, so it's costing, that's $2.4 million a year is what it would cost for HFC to carry those 300 units. And we're saying you've got 15 acres of prime land up on Government Hill. You've got a building that HFC has no responsibility for, but when HFC sits down and puts the pencil to its situation, it may very well make some sense to trade some units, spend some money on buying and knocking down Hollywood Vista, and carry the land for a future day, and HFC could come out of that situation uh, in in good financial shape, and that's a business decision. That's not a function of AHFC. Meeting a public purpose from a housing agency standpoint, it's AHFC functioning as a mortgage company, protecting itself from the fact that it has 4,000 units more than it needs right now. So I see those two sections, Representative Ulmer, totally different. The one you were talking about, is, I would say, is Section 5.
Thank you. Representative Martin?
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Ulmer. I got real concerns about this because if we go back to the original history of Alaska Health and Finance, in order to get these, what I'm really getting skeptical on, the right-wing socialist programs through, it's always our capitalist groups that come up with these great schemes for helping the poor. You know, it's always the poor we're interested in here now. And about 6 years ago, when we were going to help the poor and put millions of dollars into this program, is to get them out of rental units, to get them to have that American dream of buying their homes. And therefore, everything went up. Cracker boxes that we have in New Nacogdoches were selling for maybe $34,000, $35,000, kind of thing added to them, still junk places. Now people, the poor, got stuck with them for $98,000, $100,000. We built all kinds of cracker boxes. The ones out on Seward Highway, I think even though they're new, are worse than Richardson Vista. And those cracker boxes, ought to put a match to them and just forget about it. But the thing is here, on one end, if your group is feeling the pressure, you'd like to operate as a true financial organization. You probably had to make decision now that you wouldn't have made had you been a financial institution free of political pressures. But now, are you still being subjected to political pressures for whatever reasons to come to these decisions, the flight to quality, we're calling it? Well, before it was the flight to get from the rental unit, which in some cases were very good, to sloppy, run-down homes and village on their Rico Drive. It's absolutely nuts. It's a scam. And I guess you know that picture that those people got sucked into buying a pure piece of the trap. They're falling in floors, the new building, new condos too. Upgrading on the river, underground river, supposed to be caving in. But somehow these poor people got sucked into buying those things and putting their life savings, one little bit they had on the line, and now they're totally stuck with it. Alaska Housing, I don't know what you're going to do about it. The ones I've called, I said, man, I think you're going to be given a dirty deal. If I were you, I would leave, absolutely leave. Don't add for another upgrading deal or anything else. Because it's the only other thing I can tell them. And I'm wondering, this whole scheme here is not another financial thing in the name of the poor people, that we're going to help them. We're going to get rid of these lower quality places for you to live. The only reason they're empty is because rent went down. And now the poor people have a fair bargain in town to buy low-rented, high-quality places that let these other junkers alone. And here we are, I get rid of them. Really asking, would you do it this way if you weren't feeling political pressure?
If you could do a real quick answer, yeah. And then we have to go to Anchorage because we're about to lose teleconference.
Absolutely. This is good business. That's when we get done with this and get through the next year or so, at some point in time, I think we have to engage in a policy decision of what Alaska Housing Finance Corporation should be over the next 10 years. But you got to do this to even get to a point where you can engage in that discussion.
But no one can grade down, they can only grade up.
We're working on that with MGIC.
Those that are in trouble now can't grade up. I mean, they're stuck.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. We're going to have to put this on hold. We've only got a teleconference for a few more minutes. We've got two more people for confirmation that I'd like to hear from this afternoon. Esther Wanneke and Virgie King, I believe, are both sitting by on teleconference. They're both going to be appointed to the Human Rights Commission. And I would like to very briefly deal with that so that we can pass the confirmation recommendations on. Esther, are you with us in Anchorage? Virgie, are you with me in Fairbanks? Wanakee in Anchorage and Virgie King in Fairbanks.
Why would we get to Putin? That's good.
Do any of you have any questions with either of them? Either of you have any problems with it? Well, if that's the case, if you'd like to make a motion, I don't
Madam
think we'll
Chairman,
offend
I'll make
them.
A motion then, but be confirmed.
Is there any objection to the confirmation of either Esther Wanakee or Virgie King? No one?
It would be interesting to know what their views would be on combining the mission of this commission with the other two ones that are being discussed.
Well, if we can't get them by teleconference anyway, I guess we won't be able to get an answer to the question. Is there any objection to their confirmation?
No objection.
Without objection, then we will recommend their confirmation to the Human Rights Commission. I would like to briefly, quickly take up SB 120. We had that before us the other day. There is a proposed CES. We heard from Senator Fakes and from their staff. And it is my understanding that this proposed CS is now acceptable to the Department of Health and Human Services. Russ Webb, is that correct?
That is correct.
So the current version of CS, SB 120, is now reflective of both the administration and Senator Fakes. Can I have a motion to adopt the CS?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Hoffman. We have the House Committee substitute for SB 120. Is there any other public testimony on the bill? Any other discussion? Could I have a motion move it out? Without objection, then CS SB 120 moves from committee. Senate Bill 420 by Representative Petula. Senator Petula, Beth, are you going to be?
No, I'm not. Just a text comment
here. Is this the revision of the annuity bill?
No.
Mr. Tucker, go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair and members of the House State Affairs Committee, do I need to turn this on?
I don't know whether or not, I guess not.
In the interest of time, I'm only going to get right to the point. Senate Bill 420 is a very straightforward piece of legislation. The bill simply requires that when a school district offers sign language as a class, the district must give foreign language credit for the course. Presently, Alaska schools do offer sign language classes, and there are qualified teachers in most districts. Students at the University of Alaska Fairbanks receive general humanities credit for sign language, and they do for all language courses they take. The National Education Association, the Alaska Association of the Deaf, and the Louise Rood Center all support Senate Bill 420, and there is no fiscal impact incurred by the bill. If there's any further questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Are there any questions for Mr. Tucker?
Madam Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 420 pass out of committee and the individual recommendations.
There was one other individual who wanted to testify. Were you just going to support it, Mr. Hegmeyer?
Christine Hegmeyer.
I'm sorry. Yes. Just to support it so you don't object to the motion?
No.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion to move the bill from committee? Without objection, Senate Bill 420 does move out with individual recommendations. Thank you all for joining us this afternoon. And finally, House Bill 529. Mr. Morton.
Madam Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to ask Major Bowen to join me here in case there's any questions.
Certainly. I would just request that you try and do it as briefly as possible because we're due at a caucus meeting.
Madam, we will make it as brief as you wish.
Do you want the bill?
Just why do you want the bill in a nutshell?
Okay. Madam Chairman, there are two things that the bill does. The bill, first of all, provides workers' compensation coverage for members of the Alaska State Militia. That's the volunteer portion of the Alaska State, of the organized militia of the state that primarily serves voluntarily, but if there's any injuries that happen to them when they're on that voluntary exposure, we feel that, that they should be covered under the state's workers' compensation coverage. The second part of the bill is to provide a safety net of coverage for National Guard members who are serving during their normal training periods for the under the command of the governor, even though they're funded by the federal government. The this basically provides for a treatment and remedy under the state workers' compensation coverage when the federal remedy is unavailable or inadequate, and it also requires that whatever remedy is allowed under the state workers' compensation coverage is offset by the federal workers' compensation coverage. We did have a handout, kind of a talking paper, that outlines most of what we would have said.
Why don't you hand it out so people have it in their packets in case they want additional information? Does anyone have any questions? I'm frankly surprised that you're not covered. It's a little surprising to me, but I think it's a good idea to do so. I don't object to it. I'm just surprised to learn that you're not.
Well, Madam Chair, the National Guard is expressly covered by the statute. The Alaska State Militia, the third component of the organized militia, is not expressly covered. We believe certainly if anyone were injured and they were to litigate the issue, we would urge upon the Attorney General's office to urge a workers' compensation remedy as a limit. But we proposed the bill to make that express so that there isn't any confusion and so that they would know where their remedies lie and they can apply it directly to the workers' compensation through that system as opposed to be confused or initiate litigation or have inconsistent remedies.
Does anyone have any questions? Representative Martin.
Yes, it may take more than you expect, Madam Chair, but that doesn't help. The National Guard units and your program are pretty well guided by your agency, and you know month by month, week by week, a year in advance, sometimes what the program is going to be in the exercises, right?
I would say that's a fair statement.
A guy in the National Guard or a woman just don't go out and do what they want.
Oh, no, sir. There's a, no. It's an organized activity, and there's people working full-time to develop training plans and that sort of thing. And yes, the training schedule, the outline of the training schedule is produced at least a year in advance, subject to modification depending on events and circumstances.
Right. That confirmed my feelings of it. Now, the militia, the voluntary militia, you don't have control of. You don't necessarily know on the weekend they have meetings.
They are scheduled.
They're scheduled and approved through the command structure. They're a part of the militia. I mean, the National Guard is part of the militia, the Naval Militia is part, and the Alaska State Militia, and they all report through their separate chain of commands back up to the Adjutant General and responsible to him, and he oversees the training.
So any exercise that they undertake is screened before they do something.
Yes, sir.
The reason why I asked that, Madam Chairman, I knew a couple of people that were talking about being in the volunteer militia, and last year I signed an agreement to do it, and when I found out more about it, I said, oh, no, nothing to do with this organization. It seemed like, in my mind, from what I heard, it was just too many booze parties, and I wasn't going to go in an organization, just go out for a weekend someplace.
Too many what party?
Booze party. So, I thought, put it saying what I expect of the voluntary militia.
Well, that's certainly not the purpose for which it's founded.
I should hope not.
And that certainly is not their mission. As you know, the mission of the Alaska State Militia is as a reserve to the National Guard. The National Guard having two missions, a state mission and a federal mission, and except when they're mobilized right out of the state on that, those missions merge, but the Alaska State Militia is for the purpose of assuming that the state mission should the National Guard be mobilized or unavailable to govern. Now, that's their purpose, and we trust that officially that's what they're doing. Of course, privately, what they do is probably beyond the pale of the Adjutant General's supervision and control.
Well, I don't even mean privately. I mean, when they go out on weekend maneuvers, and I think they have a commitment of one weekend a month or something like that, I don't feel anyone sanctioning the activities. I'd hate to put those guys on a workers' comp when we don't know for sure what kind of exercise they're doing and, you know, who's in charge of transportation or communications or whatever.
Representative Davidson.
Yes, ma'am. If there's no further discussion, I'd like to move the House Bill 529 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection?
Ah, cut me off. That's what that's called.
Without any objection, the bill moves.
Well, I think I brought up enough red herring that Jeff was
against it.
Was that a second party of the Republican Party?
I hate to have
myself committed.
Don't you just copy those talking papers?
Sure.
I think we...
I told you something.
Just a brief with Joe.